This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
But right now, help me welcome live to the studio. It is the one, the only local author, historian, cartographer, Rick of Britain. Joins us. How are you, Rick? Good to see you.
I'm doing pretty good.
Happy
How are
new
you
year.
Doing, man?
Is this our first show in the new year?
It is. Happy New Year,
hey,
man.
Hey, happy
it
new
seems
year.
Like forever since I've been down here,
I
man.
Know,
I've been
I
looking
know.
Forward to it.
What'd you do New Year's Eve?
We just took it easy. I didn't even stay
you
up till midnight.
You didn't.
I did not.
Allison, well, I should say, honestly,
did you?
a little family secrets here. I don't think Allison has stayed up till midnight for New Year's Eve ever. I think maybe the first couple of years I knew her, but she's an early sleeper. I mean,
are
she's
you going to get in trouble
eight
for
or
saying
nine
that on the air?
No, I don't think so. 8, 9 o'clock, she's out, you know, because she gets up at, I mean, honestly, here's another family secret. Allison gets up at like 3 or 4 and works. She goes to her computer 3 or 4, middle of the night, and goes to work. I mean, that you want tenure in a major university.
That's right.
You got to go to, she works like you wouldn't believe.
I'm up around that time, too.
Are you serious? Are you one of those?
I am serious.
I'm the guy who's like, I stay up till 1 and have to be pulled out of bed to go to work. Because I work like, I turn
you
on
do, man.
At 10 o'clock at night. I get in 3 hours of good writing every night. From about 10 to 1.
Wow. I couldn't write at 10 o'clock if you paid me $1 million.
I used to not be able to.
I can write at 3 o'clock in the morning for 7 hours.
Good for you.
But not
That's
at,
great.
But not at 10 o'clock at night. No way, man.
Yeah.
I'm just like, you know.
This idea, man, I don't get up that early unless I'm going fishing. And that's the only reason to get up at 3 in the morning as far as I'm concerned.
Wow. I'm asleep at 10 o'clock, man. I'm out. I'm
Are you
gone.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you,
Did
man.
You know that song, Moody Blues?
Absolutely, Moody Blues. I'm a huge Moody Blues fan. And I got a chance to see him, man. It was fantastic.
Really?
I got a chance
you saw
to,
Moody
yeah,
Blues?
Yeah, I did. I got a chance to see them, and it wasn't all that long ago. Of course, I'm going to date myself now, but it was only about 15 years ago. They were in Richmond playing with the Richmond Symphony Orchestra.
Wow.
And it was just it was about 93, about 15, 16 years. It was absolutely phenomenal.
They are fantastic.
Gosh,
and
incredible.
That was the first song played on 3WV 32 years ago today when WCCV became WWWV.
Now, we were talking about this earlier. I heard on the air, somebody on the air on one of these stations said it was Norm Sprouse pushing that button. So that's not true?
Weatherman Norm Sprouse?
Yeah, Weatherman Norm Sprouse, yeah.
Well, Jay Lopez says that there were no DJs at 3WV in the beginning.
Right.
That they sort of hired one at a time after a little while.
Right.
That originally it was just tapes.
But he could have been the board guy.
Could have been running the board. Norm
right.
Sprouse at the time was actually the night DJ on WCHV.
Which
was also another big station at the time,
right?
Back in the day.
I remember.
And who knows, he may have been running the board then, only he would know. We'll have to check with him
to
find out.
Right, we'll have to ask him.
But there was no DJ.
And ask him what the weather was like that day.
Yeah. So what do you got going on?
Oh, man, I got a ton of
stuff. Before we talk history, you got some classes coming up,
I got a lot of stuff going on. Yeah, and thanks for asking about that. I wanted to tell everybody, starting in March, I'm teaching a class at the fantastic Charlottesville Senior Center, and it's Albemarle and Charlottesville in the Civil War. So it's a 5-session class, Wednesdays all through March and early April. We couldn't get the room for Wednesday, March 11th, but we're going to cover everything that happened here during the Civil War, and that everything that happened to the men and boys from here who went off to fight the war. So the Battle of Rio Hill and the Charlottesville General Hospital and the two visits that we had from Custer, the one really big visit we had from Phil Sheridan with a bunch of his buddies, and then also, you know, the battles that the guys from here fought in. So we're going to talk about Gettysburg, Pickett's Charge, Port Republic, Cross Keys, Rio Hill, of course, the Appomattox Campaign, all the battles, the guys, Gaines' Mill. And then at the end, and this is going to be fantastic, in the end we've got a travel session. So in the end we're going to get in a bus, put the keg in the back of the bus. I got that from you. Got
to have the keg.
Drive off to Richmond and see this really fantastic new museum. It's the new Civil War Museum at the Tredegar Iron Works, right there on the James River.
Wow, downtown?
Yeah, and it's new, and it's really great, and it covers the war from both sides. I mean, it's the war comprehensively.
I've never heard of this. This is new?
Yeah, this is pretty new. I mean, it's a couple years old, but it covers the war from the southern side, the northern side.
And you've been there? This is a decent museum?
Yeah, it's really nice. The African-American side, the women's side. I mean, it has the war, you know, everybody, the home front. It's really fantastic. We're going to go there. Then we're going to have lunch at the Tobacco Company, one of my favorite places to eat, right there at Shaco Slip.
Yum, yum.
And then we're going to do something that I've wanted to do for years and have never done, but we're going to go and check this out. We're going to go to Gaines's Mill, and we're going to trace the movements of the local infantry unit, the 19th Virginia Infantry, through the Battle of Gaines's Mill, step by step. And that's going to be a lot of fun.
Going to walk where they
walked. With the accounts, you know, what was happening to them and what they said, you know, immediately after the battle as to what happened to them. Yeah, step by step, walk right in the path of the 19th Virginia
Infantry.
Now,
how do people
infantry.
Sign up for this? And again, when does it start?
It starts the first class. It's five sessions. The first one is Wednesday, March 4th. So they call the fantastic folks down at the travel office at the Senior Center. It's 974-6538. All the information, of course, is up on the website, and that's www.seniorcenterinc.org. Or you can email me. It's rhbritton@aol.com.
There you go.
And I'll send you some information.
And how many sessions is it?
It's five sessions, and then it's five classroom sessions, and then
the trip to Richmond.
The travel session is what we call that.
And now, how many seats, because I know there's people probably calling right now, how many seats are available?
Well, you know, we usually take a big bus, so we'll have, we got 55 seats on the bus.
Good
deal.
And
last year, we filled up the bus, too.
You know, when I was doing my book, The Corner, and doing all that research, there were two memories that I found in letters about the Civil War at the university that to this day still are just sort of seared in my brain that does research. One of them refers to after the war when young men reenlisted, a lot of them were veterans of the war,
right?
And there's this one letter that refers to the empty arcade along the university. And the only sound being the hobbling of a soldier, you know, walking on his with a missing limb or something,
right?
And you can hear him sort of going down. Another one refers to burning the body parts out behind the chemistry lab or something, which is roughly where Clemens is today.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they did so many. It was a hospital, and so they were cutting off body parts left and right, and they would just throw them in a heap and then burn them.
Wow!
And can you just imagine that right on the grounds at the university, this huge mound of body parts of young men.
I remember reading something similar during the war. The war was still going on, and a lot of the students at the time were wounded veterans who, you know, couldn't serve in the ranks. And one guy had lost a leg, and another guy had been blinded in the war, and they were both studying law. And they were taking the same courses, so they shared a room on the lawn. And the hobbled student was taking notes for the blind student, and the blind student was helping the one-legged soldier get to class.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's just
the things that
just
have gone
gut-wrenching.
On that lawn, you know?
Absolutely.
I mean, America, you could tell the story of America from that little lawn. You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
really, that's fantastic. And listen, we got another thing starting off. Just as soon as the class ends, we're going to start the lecture and day trip series, and that's where we have a speaker come in and talk about a battle or a campaign. Once every month, the third Wednesday of every month from April through October. And then the very next week, we go to that battlefield and I give a battlefield tour of that battlefield. So we're going to some great places this year. We're going to Monocacy, which was a little battle that helped save Washington, D.C. It's just south of Frederick, Maryland. We're going to Monocacy. We're going to Trevilian Station, which was a huge cavalry battle in Louisa, not too far to the east of us. We're going to Kernstown, and that's south of Winchester. We're going to Cedar Mountain, which is just south of Culpeper. We're going up to Sharpsburg. That's going to be a huge one.
Yeah.
Also known as Antietam, of course. We're going to Five Forks, which was the beginning of the end for the Confederacy. It was fought on April 1st, 1865, the beginning of the end, oftentimes referred to as the Waterloo of the Confederacy. And then we're actually going to go to the reenactment at Cedar Creek. So we're going to have a speaker come in October. Yeah, the people have been asking me for this. We're having a speaker come and tell us about the battle at Cedar Creek from the northern side. And then that very next weekend, the Saturday, we're going to go to the reenactment, and I'm going to take everybody around and,
cool.
and give them some special presentations.
And the reenactments aren't just the battle. They have the whole camp and stuff, right?
Oh, yeah. There's all kinds of stuff at the reenactments. And Cedar Creek, every October, is really the biggest reenactment and the finest reenactment in the state of Virginia.
These people take it real seriously.
Oh, yeah. And it's at least 5,000 guys on the field, at least. Sometimes a whole lot more. Yeah,
they're out there for days, right?
Yeah, they're out there for the whole weekend. And to see the numbers and to see the battalions and the regiments maneuver on the field, you really get a pretty good idea of what it must have looked like. So it's, and what's great about Cedar Creek is where the spectators stand and sit, it's a perfect viewing position. You really kind of see these rolling hills in front of you with the men maneuvering all across
them.
Sort
of sit where the generals used to sit.
Yeah.
Up on the hill.
In a way.
Cool. So that starts when?
That starts in April and runs all the way through October next year.
So somebody could sign up for your lecture series about Central Virginia during the Civil War.
Right.
And then go right into that.
Absolutely. That's the way we set it up.
There you go. Perfect.
Absolutely. Yep.
We're talking with local historian and author Rick Britton. We'll turn our attention to another war when we get
back.
The Revolutionary War here in Central Virginia. After this break for local news and weather, you're listening to Charlottesville right now. Saw her face. 36 minutes after 4:36 on the clock. This is Charlottesville right now. News Radio 1070 WINA. Happy Friday! Paul Spencer is the founder and editor of The Hook. He'll join me live in studio in the next hour. We're going to talk about that cover story, fantastic cover story in this week's Hook about the double murder in Stanton. I'm going to say it. I'm going to call it right now. I think somebody's going to lose their job over that. It doesn't smell right. We're talking with Rick Britton, local author and historian, and why don't we play a game show? You want to?
Let's do it.
Let's.
Hey, on that monkey song, who's singing that monkey song? Because that's not the monkeys.
No, that's the one from Shrek.
It is.
Oh, that's
Smash
right.
Mouth. That's right.
Is it Smash Mouth? Is that
right.
their name?
I think you're right.
I don't know enough about these newfangled
groups. It's a lot faster.
That the kids are listening to these days.
It's a lot faster than the Monkees version.
Yeah. I like both versions, though.
I like both versions.
977-1070 will open up the phone lines. Everybody wins today, folks. On my show, everybody wins. So if you play, you win. I don't even care if you get it right. Everybody wins. 977-1070. And this is about the Civil War.
No, the American Revolution.
I'm sorry, the American Revolution.
Wrong
the Revolutionary War.
Right.
And why don't you go ahead and ask the first question.
And it focuses on the folks from around here and the war around here. So we're ready for the first question?
Yeah, and we'll let folks call in if you think you know the answer. Go ahead.
Okay.
Question number one.
True or false? Of the Committee of Five chosen to draft the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson was the oldest member. True or false?
977-1070. If you think you know the answer, give me a call. And there we go.
Yeah, just to give you an idea.
Leon, I got it, bud. I got it, Leon.
Okay. How about the other direction? How about the youngest?
Hey, caller, what's your first name?
Rick.
Rick, how you doing? Happy Friday.
All right, man.
How you doing, Rick?
Pretty good.
So is it true or false that Thomas Jefferson was the oldest member of the committee to draft the Declaration of Independence?
I would say, considering people like Ben Franklin there, I'd say it's got to be false.
Absolutely.
Of course.
That one was too easy.
That was pretty hard.
Yeah.
All right, Rick, hang on. We're gonna give you some Papa John's pizza. Hang on just a minute, and Leon will hook you up with that, tell you how you can pick up some free Papa John's pizza.
As a matter of fact, he was the youngest member. In fact, he was only 33 years old, and John Adams and Benjamin Franklin were quite a bit older.
Not amazing.
Than Thomas Jefferson.
But he had a felicity of expression that preceded him.
It did. It did. They'd read his summary view, and they liked it.
Yeah, and that is, you know what, the summary view doesn't get enough attention.
It doesn't get enough
attention.
But
that's what made his reputation.
Absolutely.
Wasn't the Declaration of Independence.
That's right.
The Declaration of Independence is helped him when he was elected president. That helped him when he was running for office, because they were like, hey, here's the guy who wrote the Declaration. But the summary view made him famous even before the Declaration of Independence.
I thought you were almost ready to give away one of the other questions.
Oh, no.
Did not say anything.
Okay. Go ahead and ask that one.
All right. You're ready? You're ready for number two?
Number two.
All right. True or false? It was the issuance of the Declaration of Independence that started the American Revolution.
So they wrote the Declaration of Independence, and then the war started.
Yeah.
1770.
The Brits got pissed off and said, we're going to war.
Because we don't like what you wrote.
That's right.
1770.
Or is that right?
True or false? 1770. We'll go to the phones. Caller, your first name, please.
Zelda.
Zelda, how are you doing?
I'm fine.
Have you had a good week?
Yes.
What are you doing this weekend?
Just taking it easy for a chance. After the holidays, I need that.
Amen, sister. Doesn't that sound like fun? Just put your feet up, take it easy, have somebody bring you some sweet tea.
That would be nice.
Sweet tea is nice. Zelda, celebrity you most resemble?
Oh, Lord. I don't know.
Nobody's ever said, Zelda, you know, you look just like...
No one ever has.
All right.
Okay.
Well, you have a beautiful voice, and I'm so glad you called.
Thank you.
Is it true or false that the Declaration of Independence kicked off the war for independence?
I'm going to say true.
Ooh.
False.
Yeah, false is right. Good job.
And then she said false?
She did say false almost immediately thereafter.
All right, well, then she wins. You win. Congratulations, Zelda. We're going to give you some Papa John's pizza. Hold on just a minute. Free pizza for Zelda on line one. And what is that story?
Actually, the war had already been going on for about 15 months. Lexington and Concord took place in April of 1775. And, of course, the declaration wasn't until July of the following year, 1776. So the war had already started.
And even before Lexington and Concord, I can't remember the name of the ship, but there was that ship that they ran aground and raided, which preceded Lexington and Concord.
That's right, but just briefly.
Yeah. So yeah. They were ready for a fight, put it that way.
They were.
Both sides, ready to go.
They were
absolutely. There was a lot of bad blood for a long time.
There was. We weren't being treated like full-blooded, equal British citizens.
No, they were being treated like honestly, like third-world subjects.
That's right.
You know, we don't care. We're just here to rape and pillage and take your resources.
We
are the empire, and you're not really part of us.
That's right.
Yeah. Let's go to number three. Question number three about the American Revolution, 977-1070. Everybody wins, so go ahead and give me a call.
Okay, hopefully this one will be a little bit tougher. What Albemarle-born soldier liberated the Northwest Territory from British control?
Ask it again.
What Albemarle-born soldier liberated the Northwest Territory from British control? Was it A, George Rogers Clark, B, Meriwether Lewis, C, Bennington St. Clair?
Oh, man.
Why do you laugh?
Because I don't know who the third guy is. Let's go to the phones. Caller, what's your first name?
Ryan.
Ryan, hey, happy Friday. How you doing?
Thank you. Thank you. I'm doing well, thank you.
Good. Thanks for calling. Celebrity you most resemble?
Well, people tell me either Paul Newman or Robert Redford. I can't quite get it.
Oh, my gosh.
There you go.
Rick, you know me. Maybe you could say it. This is Brian Hagan. How you doing?
Hey, Brian Hagan. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Whoa, and that's a crowd of folks in here.
There you go.
I think Brian is going to know the answer for
you
this
really?
One. You want to hear the question
ask
again,
it one
Brian?
One more time.
What Albemarle-born soldier liberated the Northwest Territory from British control? Was it A, George Rogers Clark, B, Meriwether Lewis, C, Bennington St. Clair?
Ooh, you know, all of a sudden I think this might be a trick. I was going to say George Rogers Clark, and I guess I will stay with that. And I'm thinking it might be the last one.
So what's your final answer, Brian Hagan?
Well, see, George Rogers Clark was the Indians. I'll say George Rogers Clark.
You're right. It was George Rogers Clark.
Good job, Brian.
And I totally made up Bennington St. Clair.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Coy, that's why I was laughing.
Coy gave it away by laughing.
That's good stuff. Hold on, Brian. Just 1 minute. He's on line one, Leon, and we'll hook him up with some Papa John's pizza. And we'll go to line two. Oh, no, we lost you. And give us a call, 977-1070. We got plenty of more questions. And give us one more time. That's the guy, the statue down around the corner.
And, you know, he really is one of the most forgotten heroes of the American Revolution. Born, you know, just north of town. They've got a recreation of his little cabin up there. But he started off his career in the West by seizing control of the area that later became Kentucky. And then, and this is, it's really an amazing story. Somebody ought to make a movie from it. With an army of fewer, and mostly Virginians, an army of fewer than 200, he liberated a number of areas that became states. The Northwest Territory is basically Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Michigan, and Wisconsin. And by ejecting the British from a number of forts out there, Kaskaskia and some other Vincennes, he liberated that area. And so it meant that at the end of the war, that entire huge region, those five, we're talking about five fairly large states, would become part of America at the end of the American Revolution. And it's all because of this man born here, George Rogers Clark, and a small group of riflemen, 175, 180 men. It's really an amazing story.
He must have been a pretty phenomenal tactician, a strategist.
He was pretty phenomenal. And
he knew he had some talented shooters on his side, but he knew how to line them up, where to put them, where to tell them to aim. I mean, he knew how to, to use those guys.
And in some of the instances, his reputation preceded him, so people knew he was coming, and they realized, we don't have a chance, so we're going to surrender.
Yeah.
But what's amazing, what fascinates me, too, is that this vast area could be conquered by such small numbers.
Just a couple hundred guys.
Because, you know, there are not that many white people out there, not that many Europeans out there.
Yeah.
You know, plenty of Indians, plenty of Native Americans.
And at one time, wasn't the Northwest Territory part of Virginia?
It was. Because of what George Rogers Clark had done, Virginia claimed the Northwest Territory. And I'm fascinated. Lately, I've been fascinated by this. That's why I wrote the question. And I've been reading up on it. So just prior to the end of the American Revolution, Virginia decided to cede its claim to the United States of America if some of the other states in the North would also cede their claims to some of the lands to the West, so that new states immediately after the war could be opened up. And then the Northwest Ordinance came about at the end of the American Revolution, and the Northwest Ordinance was written by, surprise, surprise,
Thomas Jefferson. There you
right?
go. Good
right.
stuff.
It is good stuff.
Let's go to question number four.
Number four.
All right.
All right. True or false? Lieutenant Colonel Bannister Tarleton was ordered to capture Thomas Jefferson because Jefferson had written the Declaration of Independence.
Let's go to the phones. Caller, what's your first name?
John.
Hey, John. Happy Friday. Thanks for calling.
Thanks. Happy Friday to you.
The celebrity that you most resemble?
Probably Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey.
There you go.
You know, I thought you were going to say Tom Hanks. I don't know how I got this sense.
Jim Carrey works for me. Let's ask it one more time.
Okay. True or false, Lieutenant Colonel Bannister Tarleton was ordered to capture Thomas Jefferson because Jefferson had penned the Declaration of Independence. True or false?
I think that's true.
Ooh.
Ow. No.
Oh, man.
You get another try, though.
Try it again, John.
All right. I'm going to say it's false.
Yeah, good call.
Thank you.
There you go. That's how you win on this show.
Everybody wins.
This is local AM radio. That's how you win. There you go. John, hold on just a minute, and we're going to hook you up with some free pizza. Leon, he's on line number two. Congratulations. And what's the story behind that?
And this is the part that I thought you were going to give away earlier. A lot of people, including myself a few years ago, had this impression that everybody knew, that the British knew, the British generals knew, and Americans knew who had penned, who the principal author was of the Declaration of Independence. At the time, it's doubtful if anybody could identify who had been the principal author. And that was an advantage during
the— Because it was a committee.
That's right.
Yeah.
And actually, that was an advantage during the American Revolution because the Declaration claimed to be, like Jefferson said, an expression of the American mind. So at the time, it was better that nobody understood. This one, it came from the mind of this and the pen of this one man, principally. Yeah. So it wasn't until the 1790s, and this is why I didn't answer when you started
when
talking
he wants
a little
to
bit
run, when he wants to be president.
That's
he starts,
right.
That people start saying, oh, yeah, yeah, it was him.
Yeah. It was me. It was me. It was TJ. Yeah.
And, of course, he never stood up and said it himself.
That's right. Yeah. But he had plenty of surrogates.
You didn't do that.
But he had plenty of proxies.
You don't look like you want the job.
That's right.
You have your friends like Madison and Moreau who stand up and say, you got to vote for him.
And they know you want the job.
Yeah. Yeah. You can tell them over wine at your house.
That's right. That's how it works.
Let's go to question number five, is it?
Question number five. Yeah.
There you go.
You all set?
Yep.
Which later Albemarle County resident was one of the heroes of the Battle of Trenton, New Jersey, fought on December 26, 1776. Was it A, William Short, B, James Monroe, C, Lafayette Rosser?
Oh, that's a good one. Let's go to line three. Caller, you with us? Hello? Are you there?
Oh, we lost
Let's
somebody.
Go to Doug on one. Doug, you there?
I am.
Hey, Doug, happy Friday. How you doing?
You good. How are you?
Very good. Having a good day and going to have a good weekend. The celebrity you most resemble?
John Malkovich.
John Malkovich.
That's a great movie, isn't it?
Wow, yeah. Being John Malkovich. Yeah, that's an hilarious movie.
And that guy who wrote it, Charlie, what's his name? Oh, wow, what a writer.
Charlie, the things that come
out of his mind. Yeah, I don't know his last name. Anyway, Doug, let Rick ask it one more time and then take a crack at it.
All right.
Which later Albemarle resident was one of the heroes of the Battle of Trenton, New Jersey, fought on December 26, 1776? Was it A, William Short, B, James Monroe, C, Lafayette Rosser?
How about William Short?
Ooh!
Try it again.
James Monroe.
Yes, there you go.
He was Washington's aide, right?
No, actually, he was a lieutenant at the time. You mean at the Battle of Trenton?
Yeah.
At the time, he was a lieutenant in the 3rd Virginia Infantry Regiment.
Was it Madison who was the aide? Who was the...
You're thinking perhaps of Alexander Hamilton?
Hamilton, that's what
I'm
thinking.
Yeah, Hamilton was an aide.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, though, if Hamilton was actually an aide at the Battle of Trenton. I think he was commanding one of the artillery batteries at the Battle of Trenton. But
I thought one of them, Madison or Monroe, was also an aide to Washington at some point.
Well, Madison wasn't in the war.
Okay, so it must be Monroe.
Yeah, Madison didn't fight in the war. Yeah, he was in government.
Okay.
Yeah. And
interesting.
This one is a little known story too. Hold on,
Doug. We're gonna hook you up with some free pizza. Okay?
Thanks, Doug. Thanks.
Have a great weekend.
Thanks for calling, Doug.
Doug's on one, Leon. Hook him up with some free Papa John's pizza.
This is an amazing story too, because James Monroe, as a young lieutenant of infantry, he had been at William & Mary, which was, of course, Thomas Jefferson's alma mater, when the war started, and then, of course, with the great war fever to get in, he joined the 3rd Regiment of Virginia Infantry, and he ends up in the vanguard. So he's in the advance party going into Trenton and ends up just on the northern end of town just as the American attack starts. And, of course, the Battle of Trenton is one of the huge turning points in the American Revolution. So here's this future president of the United States on the way to the battle, on the way to the fight. And we're talking about in a snow and sleet storm in the middle of the night. It's just an amazing story. Folks need to read about this. They encounter a physician who at first thought that they were British and so ordered him off his property. And then later when they realized they were Americans, he said, well, I'm a doctor and maybe I can help you, Dr. Stryker. And he volunteered to come along with them. So James Monroe is there. Dr. Stryker is just behind. They're behind this fence. And as the attack began, the Hessians in Trenton poured out of the barracks and started to man these two brass artillery pieces that commanded King Street right up and down the middle of the town. And Monroe and his captain led this first initial attack because they had to stop them from setting up this artillery that would have commanded the street. Well, the captain was wounded in the attack, and then Monroe was in charge, and he continued the attack. They captured the brass howitzers. And then later on, of course, the Americans were able to eject the Hessians from Trenton. And at this one battle, the Trenton garrison of Hessians was about 1,100. It was 3 regiments, an entire brigade of Hessian mercenary troops. The losses in killed, wounded, and captured, mostly captured, were over 950. They virtually annihilated an entire brigade. That's why this battle is so important. And Monroe was also wounded in the attack, but he continued that attack. And there was Dr. Stryker and saved his life. He would have bled to death on the icy streets of Trenton, New Jersey, if it hadn't been for this fortuitous encounter with this doctor in the middle of the night.
That's an amazing story.
So it's one of these things you have to wonder, oh my gosh, is that divine providence?
Yeah, and that's at the point when the British said, you know, we might be in trouble here.
That's right. That's right. And that was the beginning of the end.
Let's go to question number six.
Number six. The barracks were built in Western Albemarle to house the British and Hessian prisoners from what battle? A, Trenton, New Jersey, that we were just talking about. B, Saratoga, New York. Or C, Cowpens, South Carolina.
Which, by the way, is a great battle.
It is a great battle.
Yes, indeed.
It's a fascinating battle.
Yeah, I know that story. That's an amazing story. Let's go to line number two. Caller, you with us?
Hello.
Hey, happy Friday. How you doing?
Pretty good.
What's your first name?
Grant.
Grant, the celebrity that you most resemble, Grant.
The what?
The celebrity you most resemble.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, come on, Grant.
Oh, come on, yeah.
Coy Barefoot.
There you go. There you go. I'm sorry, my friend. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Ask the question again, and Grant will take a crack at it.
Okay, Grant. The barracks in Western Albemarle were built to house the prisoners, British and Hessian, from what battle? A, Trenton, New Jersey. B, Saratoga, New York. C, Cowpens, South Carolina.
A.
A, no.
Try it again. Try it again. Is it Saratoga, New York? Or Calpin, South Carolina?
New York.
It is.
Hey, there you go. Good job, Grant.
All right.
Hold on just a minute.
Everybody
we'll hook you
wins.
Up with some free pizza. Everybody wins on this show. Leon, he's on line number two. Grant wins some free Papa John's pizza. There you go. They marched them all the way down here from northern New York.
They did. Actually,
that
they marched.
It was a hell of a march, right?
It was over 600 miles, but not from New York. They marched them from Boston. Initially, they were taken to Boston.
Oh.
And by the convention, by the surrender, that's why they're called the convention prisoners, because the articles of surrender were called the convention. By the convention, they were supposed to go back home and go back home to, you know, to England and go back home to Germany, to the little states, the little Hesse states in Germany. But then Congress realized that if they allowed the British and the Hessians to go home, that would free up other British in particular from other posts who could be sent to fight the colonies, the states in the American Revolution.
So they had to hang on to them.
So Congress reneged on the surrender agreement. And so these guys who had been living in basically the squalor, these poor prisoners in squalor in the suburbs of Boston, all of a sudden were told, well, we're going to march you all the way to Little Charlottesville, Virginia, 600 miles away.
There must be people still here in this area that are descended from some of those guys.
There
right?
are,
particularly, some stayed.
Particularly from the Hessians. The Hessians came here and they saw there was a beautiful country. There were already a lot of Germans here.
Yeah, a lot in the valley. Yeah,
a lot in the valley, a lot in western Pennsylvania. And by the way, they marched them through that part of Pennsylvania, and a lot of them kind of skedaddled and disappeared among the settlements out there. But a lot here, yeah, ran away and then stayed either here in this part of central Virginia or just over the mountains in the Shenandoah Valley.
Rick Britton, local author, historian, cartographer. Check him out online, folks. RickBritton.com. Rick, thank you very much. Always
You're
look
welcome.
Forward to
it. It was a lot of fun, man.
Have a great weekend, and
you
we
too.
Will see you next week. Congratulations to all the winners, and thank you, Papa John's. A break for CBS News, local news and weather. We're back with Hoss Spencer of The Hook and our local weekly news roundup and discussion. You're listening to Charlottesville right now.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.